We're here once again for another edition of Valley Edition. It's my great pleasure to welcome into the studio three formidable panelists. Mark Kelsey, welcome, Mark.
Good morning, Mike.
David Cheesham, welcome, David.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And Terry Snyder, welcome, Terry.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing fine. And in part, I was using the wind as a metaphor as I was thinking about this week's edition, because the wind blows, and sometimes we cannot predict what will happen when it blows. We also find that some things seem to be tied down and stay where they're supposed to be, and at other times the wind will blow pieces of houses, people will have trouble walking, etc. Metaphorically, what I've noticed is that, let's start in Juneau today. Juneau's fine. The winds seem to have blown politically so that there's a kind of a floating nature to what is happening there. I start by saying most recently, and it appears to be a small part of the budget discussion, there's a question of whether House members will reduce the amount of money they pay themselves, in part to help with the budget deficit. Initially, that idea popped out. The wind blew a little bit, and it went away. And now, apparently, the wind has come, and it's come back again. We see the same kind of thing happening with a number of positions that people seem to be taking in Juneau. First this way, first that way. Does this suggest, and Terry, I'm going to start with you.
I was afraid you were.
That in Juneau, you've been there most recently, we have had to observe from afar. Are those Taku winds that are so famous in Juneau affecting the way in which people are trying to hold on to some idea and be consistent, but seem to be not always staying in one place, but going back and forth? What's happening there?
Well, I'm not feeling good about being first, because there is so much going on there. I wish it was just as easy as calming the winds. I think what you have is ideology sort of in boil form, getting ready to, I don't know what's going to happen. There's people that are just so different in the way they look at the world and what's important for services at this point and who should be paying in to pay for those services. I don't know where you get with the divide on that. I don't think it's a conversation too different than we've had in other years, but I think rather than the legislature just being divided, I think people are fairly divided. But they are starting to come together sort of in unison about starting acceptance of the fact that they have to come through with something. We have to start paying our own way. But I don't think legislators are hearing that. I think it's too easy for them. I was thinking about it too this morning, Mike, thinking about on a federal level, the repeal of the Affordable Health Care Act. There was so much focus on repeal. It was a little like our legislators, so much focus on cut. And that's the easy part, is to walk around for years and years and say those things. But when you have to actually govern those things and actually come up with an alternative, it's really, really messy. And I don't know how this will end this year. It will not end on time. I think that's a fairly good forecast. And there's been a lot of time wasted by certain members that they're all in. And there are some people that are letting them go all in, and I'm interested to see how that plays out with the public, because that's a colossal waste of time when you're putting things out there, barriers out continuously because you want your way. I think Mark gets to answer that next.
Okay.
Mark. That's a tough act to follow, as always. Some very astute observations by Terry. Specific to your question about the per diem, though, I think, and here's where I would maybe quibble slightly with Terry, I think what we're seeing now is a little bit of understanding on the part of the legislature that they do know how things look, especially this business about per diem. And they may not, there seems to be a little bit of maybe a rush to address it. For that very reason, they understand how it looks. It's been a sore spot with the public for years, and I would say maybe even increasingly so in the last couple of years. So they know it needs to be addressed. They know they need to appear to be exacting a pound of flesh from themselves in the same way that they're expecting Alaskans to. So that part of it is good. What we ultimately end up with regard to per diem, I think, is very much a work in progress. I know there have been specific proposals to just cut it by a percentage. Now there's a move to say, let's just hold back and rethink how we do this, spend a little more time on it. It's got to be tough for them in their defense for the expense of traveling to and from the Capitol and living there during the session. What we ask of them, I'm not sure the pay is commensurate, but that's a separate issue for another budgetary conversation. For now, I would say by cutting the per diem, they are at least saying, we hear you.
Okay. Well, yeah, David. I'm a little more cynical. I think it's more of a they've taken on a symbolic issue that doesn't really have an impact on the budget, because it's more comfortable to talk about that than it is to talk about income tax defending their move to cut the dividend in half. And I think it's you know, this is a very unpopular thing to say, but we need a professional paid legislature, because if we don't have that, where are they going to get the money from? And it's not going to be from good players. It's going to be repeating the history of Vico, and that anyone who is around and still remembers that might remember there's a vacuum that's created if we don't have a professional legislature.
I think that Representative from Fairbanks, Steve Thompson, made that same argument on the House floor yesterday. But is part of the problem, I wonder here, and Mark, you might be able to chime in on this, is the lack of transparency in trying to figure out exactly what they are paid, because it comes from several different areas. There's the per diem just to cover the costs of expense of being there, which I think Mark's made a good point about. And then there's office expenses, and they get money when they're in power, and they don't get money when they're not in power. You know, the people that are this is actually should be pointed out that Jason Gren, who came from Anchorage, who is actually in the majority caucus right now, has started the first move to have it done. But, you know, the thing they haven't talked about, and I haven't heard the assembly talk about it or the school board talk about it, although they all complain about the cost of health care. Nobody's talked about cutting back the cost of their own health care. And they haven't talked about the cost. I mean, health care has sort of gotten pushed off the table here. And it's the number one driver of their budget is the cost of their wages is the cost of health care. And they've neglected to talk about that, too. So it makes it even worse that these stalling mechanisms that are happening with these exorbitant amount of amendments on the floor that absolutely have no meaning, that haven't been thought out, are continuing some 160, they're in the hundreds now, are taking times away from that conversation that really would impact Alaska and the pocketbook. Plus, you know, who knows what's coming from the federal side on that side.
So what is what you're describing a situation that really was reflected when the President of the United States, in looking at health care, made a statement to the effect that he hadn't realized it was that complicated. You know, the reason why I bring it up is because I would see in what you've described in my observation that very often when people either newly arrive in a legislature, assembly, school board, there's a perhaps not the full realization of how complicated even what appear to be simple issues are. And I'm also suggesting, even if someone who has been in the assembly for a long time has had an ideologically driven position. They've taken a position, but they have not yet gone to the point of making, for example, cuts. It feels, if I'm talking in metaphoric terms here, you're setting out in a boat. You know where you want to go. It's clear where you're going. But as you go out there onto the water, the winds will affect, you know, the reality of the wind is very different than planning and saying, I want to go over there. And so what I would suspect is that what many people are finding is there are all kinds of cross currents and winds that are blowing. And it's not a simple wind at my back going along with my ideology. And it's writ large in Washington, D.C. We notice that. But I think it's the same kind of thing, or at least I throw that out as a possibility, as happening in Juneau or, for that matter, here.
I think it's just a huge difference in worldview. I mean, really, the party's platform, if you just look at them, have a very different view on the way they treat women. They have a very different view on how to take care of this, what constitutes a social your network, what essential government is. It's so far divided, and we've become, and, you know, the internet gets credit for this, and fake news sites and 100 other things, but we've become much more polarized, and so they're just getting reinforced and reinforced with those same voices, and it's easier for that ideology to hang on. But I don't know if you can change worldview that quickly, and I think that's, maybe it's ideology, but
Here's an example. Let's throw this out and get kind of your reaction. Recently, just today, there was a summary statement from our delegation in Washington, D.C., both representative and both senators, agreeing on one thing, that the initially proposed budget by the Trump administration will harm Alaska, and they're not willing to support it as presented. It was United Front, and here are three people that have, in various waves over the years, stood to repeal the Affordable Care Act and things of this sort. But my point here is that even though they have gone along ideologically consistent, at this time when you actually have to do something, the blowback, there's a lot of wind coming from Alaska that says, ooh, wait a second. And any comments about that?
Go ahead, Mark.
Well, yeah, maybe sort of generally, I would observe that it's not just the three folks in Alaska's delegation. It seems to be pretty universal across both chambers of Congress, you know, people saying that that budget is a starting point only, or it's, you know, a dead on arrival or whatever. You know, they've all made it clear Congress is the one that spends the money. So I have not heard any. I think for all the hand-wringing over the president's proposed budget, what it actually means in the long run, the hand-wringing is excessive.
Oh.
Because Congress will fix it. I don't see any of this extreme stuff going through. It's too unpopular, and it would hit Congress people right at the ballot box. You know, if those cuts go through, they're the ones who are going to have to answer for it on election day.
Mm-hmm. David?
Well, good.
Well, yeah, and that may be true. I hope it is. I think what and there is a negotiating style to always start with the most extreme position, and then everyone feels really good when you come up with something that's less extreme, and that might be what's underlying this. But it's on the other hand, it's a dangerous, if that was a tactic, a negotiating tactic, it's a dangerous one, because there are a lot of people on their base that are crying for blood, and we have a history of people running on this, these issues, you know, let's cut government, and you get, and government is always wrong and it's always wasteful. Instead of saying sometimes government's wasteful and we can try to fix it, and over a period of years, people believe that, and they expect you to. There's an expectation on the base to do these radical things, and so they're they're playing with fire, and it's hard to know what's going to happen next.
Terry?
Quick aside on that final observation. For all the times we've heard, you know, government spending is bad, but the government does not know how to spend the public's cash. That seems to be true, except for the Department of Defense. You know, there apparently all government spending is flawless. So we need to come to terms with that too.
Of course.
Well, and that's all part of a fear-based campaign. But I think those are good observations. But I also think there is a lot of people that are in power right now that are sort of in that populist position, and that's exactly where Trump has been. And there are people that were steadily against him, but went to that side once they saw where the pendulum was swinging. So it is a dangerous kabuki dance. And, you know, it goes back to there's a saying that, I hate to hear it said, but people have to feel the pain. And some of those Trump supporters who embraced that philosophy of believed that and don't seem to be put off by the fact that he is easily changed directions and changes his mind, where they'll go when he has to swing completely the other way against what he, like, as David pointed out, they've got blood, there's blood in the water, and they expect those things to happen. Now, when their kids start getting drafted for a war, there's going to be a startling wake-up call. When they walk into their doctor and they don't have health care, that'll be another one. But the question is going to be, how much will that be before, before they actually take action and turn out at the next election and do something? Or will they just decide that it's all, everybody's at that point, nobody can run the country?
Well, one of the things that happened in Washington, D.C. is that people waited for a report about the projected numbers associated with proposals to change the Affordable Care Act. And there was some considerable discussion about, even without having those numbers, what could you really talk about? Here in our own state, in Juneau, interestingly enough, whether it was a faux pas or was intentional, there was a reduction in the educational budget of 96% that hit the news and rapidly walked back, but had a similar characteristic in the sense that the group, the committee that was going to be looking at this, did not have the budget numbers to review prior to having their discussion. I find that personally disturbing, thinking if I were to, with our home budget, to say, okay, I'm going to create a budget here, but I don't have any idea what the numbers are associated with it. Is this just an exercise in blue sky thinking?
The school district does that all the time. They have to create a budget not knowing where their resources are coming on. They're the last to know.
Yeah, they've got experience, and arguably they have done reasonably well over the years because there has been a pattern of some consistency or base that they can pretty much expect. I bring that up because I think it was a very interesting example of any group that would begin that discussion without having the numbers and then have to start out by saying, well, we'll just start out as if there was no money or something. A zero-based budget. I'm not sure what it was. David, did you see any of that?
I did not.
Okay. This is a very interesting piece. It was under discussion. It was pulled back by one of the senators who was involved with it as, no. Don't worry. We're not really saying that we're eliminating the educational budget. But it was a symptom of something, I think. Okay, locally, we had an example at the Borough Assembly of the winds blowing in one direction. Everybody came into the Assembly chambers and went, and it all went so that we had a 6-1 vote, and I'm talking about a kind of a simple thing, sort of trapping, the trapping issue. And then the next morning, the winds had died down, and a reconsideration is coming to the next Assembly meeting. I find that to be interesting, too, and maybe it speaks to a question of process. And maybe the same issue I raised about Juno, I'm raising about Assembly. If you're doing your process right, you get your ducks in, you get information, and then you run your process. So if you get a 6-to-1 vote, an overwhelming vote on something, and then you have to say, let's go back and look at that again. I begin to wonder if somehow someone isn't missing stuff, or they're reacting too much to a very violent but temporary wind. Terry, you were there. Any comment?
Yeah, a bit of buyer's remorse, but in all fairness, I mean, that is the part of the Roberts Rules of Order of having a meeting is giving people the ability to reconsider. I think if they were doing this very frequently, I would be a little more alarmed than I am on this one. It is somewhat disappointing that they put a piece of legislation on the table and kicked it down the road even further, and then ended up with this resolve of not knowing what they were voting on. But you know, I think governing is messy, and I don't see that this is a pattern that alarms me too much with the Assembly. I think they should be getting better information. They should be demanding it, and there is always a penance to kind of, you know, sitting back and doing things the way you've always done them, and blaming them on things like the Open Meeting Act and whatever is the handy way of blaming things off on. But, it really is sort of incumbent. The staff can't really, they put together the ordinances, they put the resolutions together, but it's not really up to them to say, hey, you need more information. What we elect people for, that are good people that know how to ask the questions, that give valued opinions after they've taken all the information. And if you aren't electing people that are doing that, then there's a problem. But I don't pick this one out as a, I don't see it as a trend that's happening, because I think it doesn't happen that frequently.
So here's something maybe we can finish up on, which is interesting both at the national, the state, and the local level. We've all been at meetings, and we've watched people speak in persons to be heard, and we've watched the bodies listen. I have seen videos of town hall meetings where congresspeople have come out and listened or not to people who are speaking at the town hall. We know that people contact their representatives' offices, make phone calls, send postcards and texts and all the rest of this stuff. I'm wondering whether that as the various issues become more urgent, particularly around budget, particularly around program developments, that all those methods that are designed to influence and inform are not working particularly well. They become a flood of information. Perhaps someone is counting. Perhaps there's someone sitting in an elected official's office and counting. I'm thinking in the past that might have been one. But now where different sides are becoming much more sophisticated, I'm not sure that there's going to be a difference. So I know what I'm saying is that there seems to be such a flood of information coming that the person who is trying to make sense of all of this and say, okay, I have my own understanding of this, and I want to make sure my ear is to the ground so I'm hearing what people are saying out there. But is it becoming more and more difficult to do that, and more difficult also to have a true dialogue in any way? I know AARP is coming up with a way of allowing both an elected and official, the mayor of the borough, as well as the chief executive office, or to engage in a discussion with enough people to get some sense of where people are. Because the problem with most of the places where people go is that there doesn't seem to be an easy way to have a dialogue so that someone would listen and say, you know, tell me more about that.
Good point. Very good. Good pitch, too.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, well, tell us as we finish up, tell us a little bit about what's going to happen.
Yeah, it's on. If you go to AARP Alaska website, there is an ad up right today that is announcing a teletown hall. And these have gone around the country, sort of a virtual town hall. But people don't have to drive to the assembly to have it. But I think the importance, and it's on March 23rd, next Thursday. So I think what's important to know about that is the point that Mike's made is that it is a time you can actually ask a question and get an answer. Whether it's, you know, why did you do this in the budget, or why, you know, this is the service, why are you cutting this service, or why aren't you plowing this road, or that sort of a thing. So the reason AARP did it is that they recognize the fact that people don't get a lot of opportunity to actually talk and ask those questions to their elected officials in a public forum. So you can listen, you can dial in and just listen, or you can actually queue up to ask a question on the computer or by phone, and it's going to be interesting to see. And everybody in the borough will, you know, be able to participate, not just people who are 50 and over, but anybody who's, you know, interested in doing it. So we'll be very interested to see how that works. The borough has in the past done town halls, or not town halls. They've done open houses to come and talk about the budget, and I think they get 6 or 7 people. So hopefully this will get a few more people that are either listening to the conversation. It'll be recorded. Mike, you're going to record it for Radio Free
right.
Palmer. It'll be live Facebook Live to watch the whole thing on the if you would like to watch them have the conversation. And it'll be archived, too. So no reason for people not to either participate or listen later to hear what was said.
Okay. And hopefully it will be a model, because I'm beginning to become tired of watching discussions, question and answer, for example, on news programs where you'll have someone who's arguably a reasonably qualified reporter ask questions and not get answers. And in this forum, since it's not an election time, we're not electing these people to anything.
Nope.
So we're out of that mode. And there are some very specific issues that are there. I think I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, great.
I'll just say that. Okay, with that, I'd like to draw to close another edition of Valley Edition. I want to thank Terry Snyder for being here today. Thank you, Terry.
You're welcome, Mike.
Also, David Cheesham for sitting in for Zaz Hollander. Thank you.
Thank you.
And if you're wondering out there where Zaz is, she's gone to Snow Country, New Jersey. And Mark Kelsey. Thank you, Mark, for being here.
You're welcome. Have a good week.
Yep, we'll be back next week with another edition of Valley Edition.